Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, Christy Taylor here. It is time to leave all of your troubles behind again. We have another fascinating episode of the Escape Pod for you. That's a show we kicked off a few years ago as a diversion from something very stressful that had started happening, you know, in 2020 and 2021. And if you're raring for some amazing science, you are in luck. We're going to talk all about speed. This podcast has everything. The fastest animal, the speediest supercomputer, at least as of 2021, and for a bit of science history, the epic story of how Galileo, Einstein, and other scientists began to wrap their brains around how fast light moves and what that means for the universe as we know it. Enjoy the show.
I'm Anna Deming, New Scientist Features Editor.
And I'm Timothy Revel, New Scientist Comment and Culture Editor.
And I'm Rowan Hooper, podcast editor. Now that noise is one I've been hearing echoing around Charing Cross Hospital in Hammersmith, in West London, near where I live. That's the cry of the fastest animal in the world. It's the peregrine falcon, which can reach speeds of over 320 kilometres per hour. That's over 200 miles an hour during its stoop dive when it catches prey.
My word.
You wouldn't guess that from its cry, I don't think. It doesn't sound like it's really quick just from the noise it makes.
Well, that's deceptive, isn't it? Yeah. I think the fastest stoop it's ever been recorded was 389 kilometres per hour. That's 242 miles an hour. I have to say, peregrines have been a real one of the only joys of lockdown, actually, for me. I've been watching a family of them living on top of the hospital here for about a year now, and getting to know them and becoming aware of the relationships between different birds, different bird species as well. I never really was aware of before. And seeing the falcons hunt is properly breathtaking. So you see them cruising along normally and they catch the sun and that's beautiful, circling around. But then their wings fold back into a kind of attack position and they start this dive. And the acceleration is just amazing to see.
So what are they going for? I hope it's not people with chips or whatever.
No, they're much classier. Well, the diet of the West London peregrine is pigeon and parakeet mainly. And That call that we heard before, that was a female calling for food when the male has just flown back with a kill.
Yeah, I mean, the speed is just really hard to wrap your head around. I mean, I feel like I'm going quite fast on my bike when I'm moving at 20 miles an hour.
Well, yeah.
How do they go at 200 miles an hour?
Yeah, so at that speed, the air pressure could really damage the lungs. But the falcon's got these little nodules in the nostril that guide airflow away, so it reduces pressure during the dive. And they've got something called a nictitating membrane, which is a third eyelid, which is kind of basically like wearing goggles and keeps their eyes clear as they're diving. And I think the coolest thing is that their kind of image processing power is different to us, different to mammals. So there's something called the flicker fusion threshold, which is the frequency at which a light stimulus appears to be completely steady. So, you know, like when our eyes notice if a light strip starts to get old and it starts flickering, And that's because its frequency slows down enough for us to notice it. So the flicker fusion threshold of the peregrine is super high. And that means they can see in higher temporal resolution, if that makes sense. They can see faster than us, which is really cool. And when you're moving and chasing a prey item, chasing another bird at 200 miles an hour, you have to be able to see fast, which is...
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I also feel like Flicker Fusion Threshold is a great name for a jazz band.
Yeah, start it up.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's the other thing that's just I've found really kind of moving is that, you know, peregrines were endangered when I was growing up, and now they're all over the place. They're thriving, and especially in cities and urban areas. And if you search for peregrines and your nearest town or city, I'm pretty sure you'll find someone who's set up a telescope there. You can go and see them. It's just been, a really great distraction for me this last year watching them. And I have to thank Natalie, who runs the @FabPeregrines Twitter feed that's about these peregrines on the hospital. She's an amazing local naturalist. And one more thing before I finish this bit, here's another clip to play. That's a bit of a different noise. That's the sound of peregrine courtship calling. And Natalie just sent that clip over, and this week she's seen the pair mating. And it's a real soap opera going on here on top of the hospital. There's a new female in town. There was a former female, and we watched her and the male raise a chick last year. But the female was displaced, and now we have this new one, and she and the male have been doing some spectacular courtship flying, which basically amounts to the male dive bombing the female and just peeling away before he hits her and showing off effectively how amazing he is at flying. And now they've mated, so we might hopefully get peregrine eggs soon.
Oh, that would be lovely.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you'll hear about it from me soon enough.
Next week and... on a skateboard.
Yeah. Now, Anna, and by the way, there's peregrines in Bristol near you as well.
Right, I shall be looking out for the romantic roller coaster they're going through.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So, more on speed. There's one speed limit that everything is obliged to heed, and that's the speed of light in a vacuum, now defined as 299,792,458 meters per second.
Oh, is that it?
There you go. So nothing in the universe.
A bit faster than a peregrine, really, yeah.
Even faster than a peregrine, yeah. Nothing in the universe, as we know, can go faster than this. So Einstein came to this conclusion, as he mostly did all his conclusions, by chatting with like-minded friends and just kind of thinking about it. So he was not a man of full fancy maths and lasers and stuff. It was more a tap on the chin and a thought experiment, or Gedanken in his native German.
Yes. Well, you know, just a tap on the chin and you come up with that. It makes it sound
you
quite
revolutionize
easy.
The whole of physics, yeah.
Yeah,
actually, it helped that by the time Einstein got to the conversation, there was already quite a lot of weight behind the idea that the speed of light was finite, which is quite an important point in itself. And something I find really quite impressive is the ingenuity of the attempts to measure what that speed was.
Yeah, it's impressive even to consider, to come up with the concept that there is a limit, that there is a speed of light. So I suppose it was astronomers who were the first to do this.
Yes. So, and it was as early as 1638. Galileo apparently had a stab. He tried by literally just exposing a lamp to a friend on a distant hilltop. who was supposed to reciprocate by exposing his own lamp when he saw the signal. And Galileo would
lamp
then...
is exposing to each other.
Well, yes, it was just a lamp. Yeah. And so Galileo would then time the delay with the best stop clock at his disposal, which was his pulse. Unfortunately, it might not be a great surprise that it wasn't quite fast enough to measure the speed of light, but it was a nice try. And it wasn't long. It was only 50 years later in 1675 that Danish astronomer Olaf Rømer noticed that the timing of the eclipses of Jupiter's moon Io changed depending on the distance between Jupiter and the Earth. So he assumed the difference must be the time it takes for light to travel the extra distance. And from that worked out that the light must be travelling at 200,000 kilometres per second, which is pretty close when you think of the kind of equipment he had to work with at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And they get even better. So various 19th century scientists made more accurate measurements, improving on Galileo's method. And notably, Fizeau tried shining a lamp through a spinning cog at a mirror 8 kilometres away. And noticed that when the cog was spun slowly, the light passed back from the mirror through the same gap it shone through. But when he spun it fast enough, he could get a measure for the delay. So his value actually worked out as 315,000 kilometres per second. But it only took Jean-Léon Foucault to replace the cog with a rotating mirror to arrive at the speed of light as 298,000 kilometres per second, which is actually spot on to three significant figures.
It's pretty amazing, isn't it? I love those like seemingly simple ways to measure something incredibly accurately.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so people had very cleverly worked out that the speed of light was finite. And Einstein noticed certain problems that this was posing in itself. So say you shine a torch up a train track and the train is going super, super, super fast. Someone on the train would see the speed of light as slower than someone stood next to the track. Because they would be travelling along the same direction as the light beam, so they would be catching up with it kind of almost a little bit. This means that the speed of light must be constant. And the only way that can work is if time dilates, depending on whether you're on the train or not. So once Einstein got to that little eureka, it was just a case of chugging through a little bit of simple algebra. And it really wasn't that, he was not a man doing sort of crazy complex calculus. He did most of it with his Gedanken experiments, and then got to his equations for special relativity.
I feel like it's not that surprising. I mean, whenever I'm on a train, time does seem to dilate.
Especially in England.
Yeah. Like maybe a Japanese lightning train, then you might catch up with the speed of light, but not one of
those. Yeah, it's true. But anyway, Tim, you've got more speed.
So this week I've been really geeking out about the world's fastest computer, which is called Fugaku, which is an alternative name for Mount Fuji. So twice a year there's this competition to see which supercomputer is the fastest in the world. And in June last year, Fugaku won and has been in the lead ever since. So it's a supercomputer that was built in Japan by Fujitsu, the tech company, and Riken, which is a research institute, and housed in Kobe. So it's the first time a computer based outside the US and China has won the competition for nearly a decade. So it's quite a big deal. And obviously this thing is absolutely huge and consists of many racks of processors, and it burns incredibly hot. So it's a room filled with air conditioning. But to sort of give you a flavor of how impressive it is, let me hit you with some stats. So in the competition, it essentially has to solve lots of equations, and it performed at around 415 petaflops, which is floating point operations per second, or in other words, every second it's able to perform around 415 quadrillion computations.
Oh, and my God.
Yeah, which is just mind-blowing, and like a quadrillion is a million billion. So it's just so many calculations every single second. It's really hard to even fathom that. It's the result of 6 years' work and cost about $1 billion.
And is it, have they made some big breakthrough here, or have they just sort of done what we already knew to do and just tweaked it better, made it better?
Yeah, it's more the latter. So it's like the supercomputers tend to not use largely different technology to the same technology in your phone, apart from the fact that the processors tend to be the highest of highest spec, sort of research level, a few away from something that you might actually be able to get in your phone. And then they use an absurdly large number of them. So like your computer has probably got one or two processors. whereas Fugaku uses 48 core chips, which meaning it's got 48 processors on a single chip. And then of these 48 processor chips, it has 160,000 of them.
Okay. I can see why it might get a bit hot. My laptop gets hot enough.
Yeah.
Yours is probably like two core or four core or something. Yeah. So it's like, it's a real big difference. And obviously comes with some of its problems as well. So there's this fun old quote from an early pioneer of supercomputing, this guy called Seymour Cray. And he said, if you were plowing a field, which would you rather use? Two strong oxen or 1,024 chickens? I mean, it's sort of a good point. So it turned out he was actually wrong, because he thought that the best thing to do was just build one amazing processor, and it turns out actually it's better to have more processors. But the difficulties he was identifying have largely turned out to be true. So if you imagine having all 160,000 of these processors, the sort of trick is working out what to do with all the processors so that they're doing the right thing at the right time. It's sort of like
herding the chickens, basically.
Yeah, exactly. If you had enough chickens, they could do a quick job, but how do you make sure they're all doing the right thing at the right time? Yeah. And like the sort of standard analogy that's often used for this is thinking about like when performing computations is thinking about being at a supermarket checkout with a big pile of shopping in your shopping trolley. And so most computers, they would just process this one item at a time, doing the, you know, one thing followed by the next, followed by the next. And so you're sort of limited by the speed of the person at the checkout and the conveyor belt. But in a supercomputer, you try to do things as many things as possible in parallel. So in this analogy, you might have like a million items in your shopping trolley. And then rather than giving it to all to one checkout assistant who would immediately quit, you have to split it between thousands of different ones and speed it up. But obviously, this has got some drawbacks too, because if you needed, you sort of need someone to keep an eye on where all the things go and making sure it all comes back together.
You need to pack your shopping again at the end, right?
Yeah, exactly. So like if you've carefully placed your bread on top of your tin tomatoes, you don't want that to be messed up on the other side and suddenly you've got a squashed piece of bread. Yeah. And like that is a really large amount of processing power in a supercomputer goes into exactly this thing. So like to give you a flavor of it, this Japanese supercomputer with its 160,000 processors is only about 40,000 times faster than the latest PlayStation. So there's quite a big... It's not like it's 160,000 times faster. And actually, it's got many more processors than that when you think of the 48-core element. So it's still quite a big difference.
I'm just delighting in the analogies. We've got the shopping fly. I'm just picturing millions of items of shopping flying through checkouts. And then I'm imagining Galileo exposing his lamp across the hill. Thank you for both of those this week. I was going to ask about quantum computers, but I think actually we should save that for another theme, because that's a whole nother episode.
That's all for this week's Escape Pod.
Do subscribe and tell everyone you know about Escape Pod, and get in touch on @NewScientistPod. That's it. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
This podcast is produced by OG Podcasts. Find out more at ogpodcasts.co.uk.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.